Filthy Henry case files. The nanosecond of nothingness. Filthy Henry, Ireland's first and foremost fairy detective, stared down at the objects which Shelley had just placed on his table. He examined them for the briefest of moments, then looked up at her smiling face.
"Shoes," he said.
"Right," Shelley replied, nodding. Glancing back at the shoes, he frowned at them, trying to will some sort of magical epiphany to burst forth from the objects.
"Bronze shoes?" Filthy Henry asked,
a little unsure if that was a question worth asking.
"Correct,"
Shelley said, pointing at him with a mix of enthusiasm and joy. Filthy Henry took a deep breath, sat upright in his seat, and frowned at the woman standing across from him in his office.
"Children's bronze shoes," the fairy detective said.
"Exactly," Shelley confirmed with more head nodding.
"Shelley, look, I'm going to be honest with you. This is literally the worst game that I've ever played in my life, and I'm over 100 years old."
Shelley pulled out the spare chair, typically reserved for clients of the fairy detective, and sat down at the desk. She reached over and pulled the two small bronze shoes back towards her side of the desk.
"Filthy, for once, can you not just be yourself?" she asked. "Who would you like me to be? I can do a glamour for about 3 hours. So long as you don't need me to walk about the place. It even changes my voice. Go on. What Hollywood actors caught your eye lately?"
Shelley gave him one of her legendary eye rolls, then picked up the shoes and put them in her coat pocket. "Look, if you're not going to help me on this case, then I really don't know why I bothered even coming into you."
"What case?"
"This one," Shelley said, patting the pocket with the shoes.
"The case of the bronze baby shoes." "Shelley, Shelley, Shelley, there's no case here. Beyond why on earth someone would actually make something like that. You think babies are going to be strutting their stuff with shoes like that? Judging by the size of those shoes, they're for a kid only a few months old. There's no way a baby that young is walking around the place. Logic."
Filthy Henry could tell that Shelley was losing her patience with him, as she tended to do any time the fairy detective piled on the sarcasm. Truth be told, over the past few months, Shelley had made a name for herself as another detective who dealt in cases relating to magical and fairy-related things. She even handled a fairy with a peculiar penchant for potatoes not so long ago, single-handedly. That sort of stuff would have rattled anyone else in the fairy detective business, but not Filthy Henry. It meant that the world had another person they could annoy over cases that were neither fairy nor magically related. But the problem was Shelley rarely took on a case without first running it past Filthy Henry. Almost like he was some green, large-eared, swamp-living creature that she needed training and guidance from in all walks of life.
"Fine," he said finally, and waved his hands in the air dramatically. "What's so special about the bronze shoes meant for a baby who clearly can't walk?"
As the fairy detective expected, Shelley was only too happy to ignore his recent transgressions and dive right into explaining why her nothing case was something of interest. She quickly pulled the shoes back out of her pocket, dropping them onto the desk with a loud bang, then tugged her notepad free from another coat pocket and flicked it open to a page with some notes on it.
"So," she said, her voice taking on a little sing-song tone to it, "over the last 20 or 30 years, there have been several cases of babies disappearing from their homes."
"Several?"
"Yes."
"Well, how many several?"
"Seven, I think," Shelley said, checking her notes before tapping on a section of the page. "Yes, seven."
"Then just say seven,"
Filthy Henry said.
"I hate when people use several. Sounds ambiguous. So the number you want to talk about is more than three but less than infinity. I need facts and data to work with cases. Come on, people."
"You want facts? Fine. Seven babies in 20 years have just disappeared without a trace. Nobody has ever seen them again, and their parents have no idea what happened. The guards have been involved in every case, obviously, but even they have no leads.
Strangest of all is that most of the babies disappeared on the same night, just years apart, from a completely locked home, with no sign of forced entry, and never a ransom note sent, Filthy Henry interrupted, pointing at Shelley.
Exactly that, she said. How did you know?
The fairy detective mimed holding a phone up to his ear.
The call was coming from inside the house, he said with a creepy voice.
Filthy!
Fine, fine, the fairy detective said. It was just a logical guess. The only reason you'd even bother bringing something like this to me is if you thought there was a hint of magic coming off it. Otherwise, you know full well that I tell you I don't get involved with a case like this.
But that's not true.
Filthy Henry smiled at his fellow detective. We're going to skip over the part where we both know that's true and move right along to how you stumbled onto this case. Gamblers often spoke about how they disliked playing poker with their friends. The game of poker, while containing very specific rules on how to win a hand, was not actually about playing cards. It was all about playing your opponent. Figuring out when they were lying, and if they were lying, how likely it was that the lie was meant to be a big or a small one. When you spent your years talking to the same faces about anything and everything, you learned to read their tells by accident. Playing poker against friends, true gamblers all agreed, was no different than insider trading. You had all this information on them that ensured you would win, and they had no options other than to give you all their money. Asking Shelley that one question about how she had stumbled across the case was, to Filthy Henry, the same problem gamblers faced when playing poker. He knew when she told lies, or was embarrassed to reveal the truth about a situation. All you had to do was ask her the right question. Not that Filthy Henry would ever explain to her that he had this tell in his back pocket. Having a person you could work with was one thing, but being able to get them to answer questions without actually answering them was an entirely different and more important aspect to the relationship.
Shelley began. I'm not sure I can tell you.
Oh, for Dagda's sake, he knows I'm here, a disembodied voice said from the open office doorway.
There was a slight shimmer in the air, like a mirage going in reverse, and a leprechaun wearing a stylish green suit and leaning on a golden cane appeared. He reached up, adjusted his bowler hat, then nodded in the fairy detective's direction.
Half-breed, the leprechaun said by way of greeting.
Leprechaun, Filthy Henry said back, frowning at the new arrival.
To what do I owe the displeasure?
Well, I have a case for you, obviously, Leprechaun, King of the Leprechauns, said.
One that I had tried to get your mortal assistant here to convince you to take on, without the need to reveal it was coming from me.
Excuse me, Shelley said, clearly annoyed. One, I'm not his assistant. I'm a detective. Two, I hadn't revealed it was coming from you.
You're about 5 seconds away from telling them that I'd given you the bronze shoes, the leprechaun said, walking into the room and doing his very best not to touch anything.
But why didn't you just get her to take on the case? Filthy Henry asked Leprechaun.
Shelley, the other detective, is just as capable of doing these things.
Shelley nodded her head enthusiastically, while Leprechaun arched his left eyebrow and gave her a sideways glance.
Well, no disrespect to Shelley, he said. While her detective skills are impressive, and nobody in the fairy world can understand why she bothers to associate herself with you, I need somebody with a little bit more magic in their tank than she has.
There was no arguing with that logic, sadly. While Shelley had the ability to see the magical spectrum of the world, thanks to a slight misadventure with death a few years previously, she had very limited magical abilities. There had been a time when a fairy sponsor had allowed Shelley the ability to cast 3 basic spells a day. But Filthy Henry had abused that little gift in order to solve a case one day, and the sponsorship had been rescinded soon after. So if Leprechaun needed a magic-wielding detective, his pool of potential candidates had a population of 1.
Hang on a second, I'm busy, Filthy Henry said.
You're what? Shelley said, surprised.
I'm busy, the fairy detective repeated. I'm working on a very important case at the minute. It's a bit wooden, but it still needs to be done. Just make your utterly stupid joke now so that we can get it over and done with, Leprechaun said, clearly exasperated by dealing with Filthy Henry.
The fairy detective pointed over at some wooden shelves, brackets and tools in the corner of his office. I've been meaning to put that shelf up for the last few weeks, and finally my caseload's empty enough that I can.
Leprechaun clicked his fingers 3 times and sent out a green pulse of magical energy. It drifted through the air, circled around the bits of shelving, and started to turn them into a poor version of an animated classic movie. The brackets floated upwards and aligned themselves against the wall, while several screws lined up with holes in the brackets. A usually inanimate screwdriver became very animated and drove the screws into the wall, with all the torque of a power drill. Once they were securely in place, the shelves flew up and lay across the brackets before the screwdriver attached little hooks onto them to keep them in place. Filthy Henry watched, hiding his jealousy at such frivolous displays of magic that he would never be able to do, and sighed.
"Well, there goes a week of work," the fairy detective said.
"That really wouldn't have taken you a week," Shelley said, watching as the screwdriver returned itself to the toolbox and the magical glow faded away.
"Oh, I'd say it would have," Leprechaun said. "The half-breed is utterly useless when it comes to doing DIY. And now that your caseload appears to have suddenly cleared, let's go."
The King of the Leprechauns didn't wait for any further discussion. He once again clicked his fingers 3 times and teleported everyone out of the office in a spray of green lights and golden shamrocks. They materialised in the middle of a rain-soaked field, with charcoal grey clouds hanging overhead. Shelley grabbed the edges of her coat and buttoned it up against the wet and the cold. Teleportation was a standard travel method used by the fairy world, but it seemed they had many varieties on the magical mode of movement. Almost like no race wanted to copy how others did it. Even Filthy Henry had a different version of teleporting folk around the place, although due to his half-breed nature, the fairy detective rarely actually teleported anywhere. This, however, was the first time Shelley had been teleported from the sunny weather of Dublin to the gloomy weather of wherever they were now. She looked over at Filthy Henry, who was also busy buttoning up his coat, then at Leprechaun, who was somehow standing beneath the spot that the rain was not falling on. When he caught her looking at him, the Leprechaun clicked his fingers and Shelley felt the rain on her face cease. Glancing up, Shelley saw a faint shimmer of magical energy from Leprechaun's spell.
"Thanks," she said.
The King of the Leprechauns gave her a slight nod of the head.
"So how come it's raining here?" Shelley asked.
"The weather report for today was a rare day of sunshine all over the country. Are we no longer in Ireland?"
Filthy Henry looked at her magical umbrella with a hint of envy on his face. "Oh, we're still in Ireland. Otherwise Shorty over there wouldn't have access to his magic. Just like I wouldn't."
"Correct," Leprechaun said. "We're still in Ireland, just located at a prison."
A prison?" Shelley asked, somewhat surprised. Prisons were a very human concept to have in a fairy society.
"Prisons are meant to be places of misery and suffering, so that the inmates have no joy in their lives. For this particular one, of which I'm the warden, I decided to have a perpetually bad weather system in place. Only fairy folk and half-breeds and humans with little modification, such as yourself, can actually experience the miserable weather."
"You do know that prisons are meant as rehabilitation centres, right?"
Filthy Henry said, walking over to stand beneath Shelley's magical umbrella.
"Making people hate being in one doesn't exactly help them get back into society as functioning members."
Leprechaun shrugged.
"When you get to run a prison, you get to pick what the weather'll be like. If I had my way, you'd be in there already. I'm sure you've done something worthy of getting locked up."
Filthy Henry laughed.
"Well, it ain't no crime if there's no bodies left behind."
"Especially if you chargrill said body into the cobble lock of Grafton Street," Shelley said, referring to the time Filthy Henry had obliterated a vampire.
"No body, no crime," Filthy Henry replied, glaring at her.
Shelley knew that glare well enough. It meant that she had said too much, and the fairy detective wanted the current conversation to be killed before he turned on the sarcasm. Not that Filthy Henry needed an excuse to be sarcastic. It was basically his default setting. "Anyway," Shelley said, shaking her head, "do you want to explain the case to Filthy so that we can get out of this magically mad weather?" Leprechaun twirled his golden cane around in the air before stamping the end of it into the wet grass. He reached into his left coat pocket and started rummaging around for something.
"Right, so here's the thing. There's a fairy in the prison that I need you to get a confession out of. He's been kidnapping mortal kids and killing them for the last 20 years. We call him the Bronze Baby Burglar, on account of these bronze shoes left as a sick calling card.
Hang on a second. That's very convenient alliteration, Filthy Henry said.
Well, we needed a name that rhymes, Leprechaun replied. It's like an ancient law or town charter or something.
Wait a second. Shelley mentioned back in the office that these cases go back 20 years. How come you're only coming to us now about it? Has there been a recent one?
Yes, the King of the Leprechauns said. Back in 2002. That's recent, right? In terms of mortals.
One of the things Shelley had learned early on in her involvement with the fairy world was that there were very few fairies that did not live for centuries at a time. Even Filthy Henry, despite being a half-human, half-fairy, aged slower than mortals and looked like a man in his late 30s, despite being a century old. Time, as scientists said, was relative when you thought about things in those sort of terms. 20 years for a human was a while ago. For a fairy, it could almost seem like yesterday. Leprechaun had made an assumption that could probably have cost them numerous leads on the case.
No, she said calmly, before Filthy Henry started talking again. That isn't recent. I was still in school 20 years ago. But it does make Filthy's question more relevant. Why now?
Oh, because the culprit won't give us any information. And we want you to do some interrogating and get the information out of him, the leprechaun said. We've tried all sorts of spells and incantations. Even borrowed a trick or two from some of the forbidden magic. Nothing at all coming out. So we figured maybe bring in a few new faces and see if you can figure out what he did with the babies.
Leprechaun finally pulled whatever he'd been searching for from his pocket and tossed it towards Filthy Henry. The fairy detective caught it in mid-air and held it up in front of his face to examine it.
A torque? He asked the leprechaun. I have to say, I'm not really one for jewellery.
Is that like the old Celtic bands worn by men? Shelley asked, leaning towards the object to get a better look. It was exactly like the history books described, not to mention the ones with actual pictures. Three strands of metal had been woven together, giving the impression of being rope, and then curved formed the shape of a ring. Instead of the ends of the strands touching, two small bronze balls acted as stoppers on either end. Compared to the ones that Shelley had seen once on a school trip to a museum, it was a plain torque, lacking any ornate patterns or designs. Something clearly created for function over fashion.
Oh, so they still teach some useful information in mortal schools. How fascinating. Yes, it is a torque. While you're wearing it, you can cross through the dimensional barrier that separates this world from the pocket dimension the prison is in. Every guard in the place has one, but that one is specifically tailored to allow a half-breed in.
Filthy Henry clasped the torque around his left wrist.
That explains it then. Pocket dimension that can only be accessed using these bands. Meaning the prisoners can never escape without one of these. Exactly, Leprechaun said, tapping his nose. Plus, without a torque, their magic is negated in the pocket dimension. I had to have that one custom made on account of your half-breed nature. But it should work as well as the others. Now, in you go.
He gestured with his walking stick, and an oval hole appeared in the air before Shelley and Filthy Henry. The torque on the fairy detective's hand began to glow with a soft yellow light, presumably to let them know it was working. With a shrug, Filthy Henry stepped through the oval, with Shelley following close behind.
Filthy Henry Case Files, The Nanosecond of Nothingness, is an original story by Derek Power and Niall Milton. Narration and music by Niall Milton. Other works by Derek Power are available to buy right now on Amazon Kindle. Part 2 of this story is available immediately. And while you're there, why not send us a like or subscribe to the podcast? Or even better, share it with one of your friends. We'd really appreciate it.